Welcome to the Canadian Sec Podcast, episode 54 for Wednesday, January the 6th, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
My name is Derek Silva.
And my name is Jameson Roberts.
And we want to wish everyone a happy new year. I managed to actually say the correct year on the intro when only one take, so that's good. And we also want to welcome back our good buddy Jameson. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you back, of course. And you've had some big life changes since you've last been on. Why don't you get us all caught up?
Well, I'll start with the personal. Moved, but I think more importantly, and at least certainly a bigger deal to me, is that my wife and I had our first baby. So I am now happily part of the fatherhood club.
And, welcome.
Thank you. On the professional front, I'm still doing a little bit of freelance development and design here and there, but more importantly, I'm now working for an awesome firm here in town by the name of Arcane Digital. So it's great to be part of a phenomenal team.
Right. And we're actually going to mention Arcane in our first local story. We should also mention part of the story is we're talking. You guys have just moved to brand new offices. So if you hear some background noise and stuff like that, it's probably still some work going on. So, Jameson, why don't you give us a quick coverage of your brand new building you've moved, or brand new old building, I should say, you've moved into.
Yes, it's kind of like Ellipsis Digital and Engine 74 is its brand new old building. So it's originally built in, I believe, the 1920s. It started off as a fish warehouse, I believe. Over the years, it's been a couple of different restaurants, and now it's home to Arcane as well as our good friends at Room Roster. It's been a pretty huge transformation. It's gone from being big cinder block and brick walls to three sides have glass from floor to ceiling. It has network ports and Wi-Fi out the yin yang, great new fiber internet that I get to play around with for recording the podcast on.
Excellent. Yeah, it's 35,000 square feet. You're right beside the CN main line, so you get to see all the trains go by, too.
Yep.
And the Greyhound Station.
Yep, and right by the Greyhound Station. And I've probably heard a little bit back there. Of course, the dogs of Arcane are running around the main floor. but it's a big change from our 8,000 square feet shop to this 35,000 square feet office building. It's quite impressive, and while we're still under construction, hopefully we'll have a big opening party soon. You guys will make it down.
Excellent. No, I should point out that officially I owe Jameson a coffee because I really didn't think they'd be in there by the new year, and they were. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen, it looks fabulous. And yeah, we're looking forward to seeing it. And again, another good example of a reuse of an old property. Shows what can be done.
Yep. And also the fact that we had to grow, we were growing so quickly that we had to over provision space because we went from 35, 40 employees at the beginning of 2015 to 70 by the end of the year. So
yeah, I remember being across the road at the Roundhouse when you guys moved in there, and practically from the time you moved in, you were already looking for more space. It's a good news story.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on. First week of January, normally, if it wasn't for the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, it'd be a pretty quiet week. This is the biggest consumer electronics show in the world. Always wear a lot of trends. It's always funny over the years how you see different things come and go. It used to be all about computers, and these days a lot of it's the Internet of Things, cars, all sorts of things. So, you know, we definitely have some features here. There's a lot of concept cars, believe it or not, VR. Anything else people are seeing in general from the show?
The one thing that caught my eye I saw last night was a bendable OLED screen and an actual working demonstration, although it seems to still have some problems with pixels being burnt out or getting out of alignment. But it's still really cool to see a television screen that's high def that can be folded into like a 1-inch type circle. Wow. So
that's extremely flexible. I think the big thing for me this year is finally seeing, I'm hoping somebody wins the protocol war in when it comes to the Internet of Things. I don't care if it's Thread or Zigbee or Z-Wave or or Bluetooth. I don't really particularly care what emerges this year, but I'm really hoping that either two standards that, you know, maybe even still talk to each other through a well-designed hub of some kind come out of this year, and there isn't this whole VHS Betamax type war yep. still happening. Somebody needs to win out, or two standards need to win out that, like I said, can talk to each other through a central hub, whether that's a Google On hub, whether that's a Wink, whether that's something similar, or Samsung's SmartThings division that they bought, I think, last year. I want to move into the connected home, automated home era in a big way, but I know that if I do it now, I'm going to spend a lot of money that I'm going to have to spend again to yep. replace a bunch of stuff. So I'm not prepared to drop any sort of money on that sort of thing yet.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that's going to move the adoption rate forward. It's got to be easy for non-tech technical people. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us, we're geeks. We have no problem being on the leading edge playing around with this stuff. But I always say, unless my mom can find it easy to use, then it's, you know, the adoption rate's not going to be there. Yeah. And as you say, until they get that in, it's definitely an issue.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've taken a look at, I would love to do, you know, smart door locks and stuff like that. But my biggest thing is I don't want to have to pay for the smart lock as well as then a hub to connect it to the internet. Either pick something that's an existing standard like Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, or just agree on something. You're 100% right.
Yeah. Yep. That example particularly, most of the smart lock, like deadbolt lock things, do work on Bluetooth, right? Because they want to see your phone coming, or you're going to unlock it from your phone. So that most of the time works. But I think the I can't remember the name of it now, but the one that was Lockatron is Wi-Fi enabled as well, and
August,
August as well, yeah. So that you can unlock it from anywhere, which is great because that's ultimately what I want. What I really really want is a smart lock with a video doorbell so that if my parents come over unexpectedly, I'm happy to let them in. That's fine. Like they don't need.
Well, I would hope so.
You know, even if I'm not there, but I'm on my way home or something, like yeah. that's totally fine. But I want to know that it's them so I can actually hit a button and say, yeah, unlock, drop off whatever you're dropping off, or, you know, watch some TV. I'll be there in 10 minutes or what have you. And making that happen right now is, I could do it. August has all the devices, but it's like $600 or $700.
Wow.
Yeah.
That happens. So yeah. there's that as well. And like I said, if I'm going to spend the money, I want to spend it once because it's a door lock. It should last for 10 or 15 years. Yep. No problem.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, yeah, we're going to have to see. Today's the official opening of the show. It's actually been, you know, they had the previews yesterday. So we'll see what else is announced there. The other one I really noticed is, and as regular listeners of this podcast know, I hate wires. Dell's announced some wireless monitors that actually allow you to cast from both Windows and Android devices via Miracast and Bluetooth. Nice. It's also got a built-in charging pad that supports both wireless charging standards. So again, 23 and 24 inch, it's just the start. I didn't see, oh, here we go. Yeah, price $469 and $429. And they're going to be on sale starting March the 31st. Now, all we got to do now is get power solved. Wireless way to transmit power, and then I'll be truly happy.
Now, what I really want is like a 52-inch version of this.
Yes, exactly. Well, the thing is, we know it's starting, so,
yeah.
You know, I it'll be interesting. And also, obviously, I'd like to see a Mac and iOS version as well for those of us that have both types of devices in the house. You know, we're certainly getting there with Bluetooth and wireless keyboards and mice and stuff like that. But, yeah, I hate cables. Go ahead,
what I want to see, or what I would love to know, just is how it's going to keep up with things that require high frame rates, like video games or people who are trying to push the frame rate boundaries. Yep. Because, I mean, it's great for offices where you can just push up to the screen and it works, et cetera. But for those of us who like doing multiple things and not just one, you know, not just productivity, but also like to game or even being able to share a screen, not only for your computer, but your TV components, that's where things are going to start to get tricky. And we probably won't see that for another 2 years, but I could start to envision a home environment where you maybe only have two screens, or you have one and it's both your computer and all of your PlayStation, Xbox, all of those things. So it would be cool to see that happen, but right now I don't think I would buy one of these, mainly just because I wouldn't trust it for stuff like gaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure some people, once it's out, will fully test it and we'll get a better idea. But it shows us there's basically hope.
Yeah, what isn't covered here is whether it will display things from a phone in landscape.
Exactly, yeah, because you see that ugly portrait on the
For a demo, that's totally fine, right?
Yeah.
What I really want then is to orient the screen in portrait so that my phone displays properly in portrait or the demo or whatever I'm doing. And if I can't, then I should be able to orient the phone landscape and the picture also changes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's going to be more important, especially how we're starting to see where people, you know, eventually their phone's going to be their computer. They're going to, you know, connect it to a keyboard and something like that, and touch screen,
or Microsoft Lumia 950.
Yep, exactly. Stuff like that. So again, it's a start. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, you're also even seeing that with the iPad Pro more than anything.
Yeah,
that will probably be one of the first things that might start to shift a bunch of things towards being that sort of screen that you just pick up and take with you.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be several things. You know, we still see quarter upon quarter PC sales are dropping. Laptops have picked up things like tablets. So it'll be interesting to see. We're going to have to keep our eyes open at that. Also, we talked about BlackBerry the last couple of weeks. They're at CES. They've obviously had a pretty successful quarter, as we talked about. So they're going to be featuring... they're going to be featuring the Priv, their new phone, obviously, but they're also, you know, they're still big with that QNX platform for automobiles, like the original Ford MySync and stuff like that. So they're going to actually having a news conference fairly soon today, and I think they're going to be showing off their latest QNX concept car just to show, you know, the tech and what it can do with things like that. So, you know, again, interesting stuff going on from our friends at BlackBerry.
I think it's also in line with all of the CarPlay things that, like, if they're going to try and maintain something other than just being, say, the Bez type of support, et cetera, they're going to have to try and compete with this, with sort of the interconnectivity with your car. I think it was announced a couple of weeks ago about how there's finally some CarPlay cars coming out. So it'll be interesting to see how it kind of plays out, whether or not the manufacturers are going to sink their time into just one or whether they're going to try and make it work with a bunch.
I think if they're smart, they'll make it as agnostic as possible. I know Volkswagen, I believe it's Volkswagen, their in-car system will work with Apple CarPlay, will work with Android, the Android in-car system, and connect really well, really natively to your device, and display the appropriate interface on the screen.
Yeah.
So it's obviously doable, and if you want to have an easier time of selling cars in 2016, that's what you're going to have to do.
Well, and just like we were talking about with home devices, you know, you want some basic standards. So, you know, I know Ford signed up with QNX because they've got some standard there. So again, exactly as you're saying, you know, we don't want the VHS beta thing here. You want as much standards as possible across the board.
Yeah. Well, and you don't want to limit on the sales side. You don't want to limit yourself to Apple owners, right? Yeah. Like Apple device owners or Android device owners or Windows.
Exactly.
Like you want to make it as easy as possible. And if that means you need to hold back for a couple more years to get it right and just offer whatever's capable over Bluetooth, fine, do it. That's totally a legitimate option. If for whatever reason, Hyundai or Ford or Chrysler or whoever needs a little bit more time to get it right, that's fine. Get it right and do it right the first time instead of some of the really odd systems we've seen from Nissan more recently. Or I think that's my most recent example where it's built on Android, but the interface is terrible and it's so laggy. And,
right.
The Altima I'm driving right now, it's even between the dashboard and the infotainment system, the entertainment system, it's like the icons are inconsistent and that sort of thing. And that doesn't bother the majority of people, but it will bother them more and more. And as someone who notices, it bothers the heck out of me.
Right, right. So, anyway. Okay. Yeah, no, like I said, it's good points. And like I said, we're gonna keep an eye and hopefully they'll get it. Okay, moving on the gaming front, the Oculus Rift, the wonderful VR thing that makes gaming very immersive. It's launching at the, where is my tab here? See?
March 28th.
Thank you. Yes. This is why we have three of us. For $599 US, so that's about $4 million Canadian, the way our dollar's going.
In limited locations at select retailers.
At select retailers. At least Canada is one of the 20 countries.
Oh, yeah. It would have to be. Like, that would be silly. Like, just like the first time the iPhone was announced. It's like, oh, Canada will get it in like 3 months. Guys, we're right here. Like, come on.
So it's also going to come with an Xbox One controller, an external tracking camera, a newly announced Oculus remote. Big for the Xbox, stuff like that. I remember playing with one of these. Another good friend of the podcast, Derek Martin, had one of the pre-preview ones, and it was very neat. I'm a big flight sim guy, so I like that sort of idea where you can just turn your head and see the enemy plane coming to shoot you down. That much easier, stuff like that. So, yeah,
I really want to see it with Eve. I'm not going to lie; it made me very happy to see this shipping with Eve.
Right.
That game is prime for that type of interface.
Yeah, exactly.
I really want to see this with Star Wars Battlefront.
Yes,
Battlefront looks fantastic. Now, I'm not a big first person shooter player. However, the reason for that is because I don't feel like I'm there. The controls to me are usually extremely non-intuitive. Especially more recently, some of the games I've seen, third-party shooter, first-person shooter, doesn't matter, having to control two joysticks so that I can look around or point my gun or whatever weapon I've got, it feels really off.
Clunky?
And yes, extremely clunky and very confusing. And I sound like a grumpy old man. Get off my lawn. But... I want to hold something that resembles the thing my character is holding in the game, and I want to be able to pull a trigger or something like that. And I'm not a really violent person, but like if I'm going to play a first-person shooter, I should be able to point this thing at the right place on screen and actually shoot something when I pull the trigger. So I know that's like another 5 years out still, but I'm just happy that we're at a point where we've got the Rift. We have the Samsung Gear VR. We have the HTC and Valve developed Vive coming out later this year. And if my phone's good enough.
Don't forget Microsoft's Halo.
Yep.
HoloLens.
Yeah, well, that's not virtual reality, right? That's augmented or mixed reality, depending on the term you want to use. But like that's my thing. If you want me to feel like I'm there, give me a great screen, strap it to my head, put something in my hands, and I will actually feel like it could be a paintball game. Or like a fake sword. I don't care. I want to feel like I'm actually doing the thing.
Feel like
things.
You're actually there, right? Now we should also go ahead.
No,
I was going to.
I was going to say, I still haven't found a better remote or a better controller than the N64 controller. It's all gone downhill since from there for me.
I'm still a mouse and keyboard guy. I was going to say, that's one thing to note, like it's the Xbox One. But if you have a PC, you have to have a pretty high-end graphic card and all that. Roughly about $1,000 you're going to be paying. You need at least an NVIDIA GTX 970 or an AMD 290 or greater, 8 gig of RAM. An i5, da-da-da-da-da-da. So you get the idea. Again, if you're a fairly serious gamer, you're going to have that sort of hardware anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they've also, you know, even though people say, oh, console gaming's where it's at, well, no, NVIDIA, they released a Titan X. It's a 12-gig frame buffer of a graphics card last year. So, oh, yeah, there's still some big stuff on the gaming side. So yeah, again, it'll be interesting to see. Yeah. I like the idea for my flight sims. If I look at my Steam games, there's a hell of a lot of flight sims and racing games on there. So, okay. That's most of the CES.
I do want to give another shout out to Oculus for how they're handling the people who kickstarted them way back when.
Good point.
And it's really great to see them follow through and still providing those kits to people, even though it's been, 4 years since they kickstarted in 2012. So
we're definitely going to have to get Derek Martin on the podcast once he gets his.
Well, you know, they get like $1 billion from Facebook, so surely the goodness they have the money to keep moving forward here.
I would hope so. $1 billion, yeah, exactly. Okay, moving on to some non-CES news. CBC's out with a LTE wireless speed rank for Canada. The good news is we're actually pretty quick compared to the rest of the world. The bad news is your mileage may vary on what they tell you in their glossy promotions.
As always.
So, yeah, you know.
Notice they also admitted how much we're probably overpaying for it as well.
But I also say there is, you know, we are different than the States. There is a challenge for having all those cell towers in the middle of nowhere where only the moose are picking them up.
Stuff like that.
But yeah, no, I agree. I always find it's amazing how almost exactly how the prices seem to match across the big three.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, the big thing, at least from the price standpoint, is that they're offering LTE, but LTE is really only offered in the highly populated areas. Yep. So it'd be really nice to see if I am paying for LTE, if I was living elsewhere, not paying for LTE, actually paying a significantly lower rate because all the infrastructure for 3G is already there.
I have to admit, though, I switched to an LTE phone a couple of months ago, and the call quality is just unbelievable. When you get it, I'm very impressed with that. So, you know, if that's what my little bit of extra is doing, it's certainly I notice a difference there. So, okay, moving on, we're about 22 minutes in, so we're trying to keep this under 30, as everyone knows. Facebook made its Android app crash to test your loyalty. I read this story and I'm thinking, God, we're addicted to Facebook.
This must have been a time where I wasn't using it very often because I am an Android user and I have it for a very long time. Well, I was briefly on an iPhone 4S early last year for about, I don't know, 6 or 7 months. About a year, actually.
Okay.
So maybe it was during that time. But, yeah, I can't really say. I mean, certainly it crashes, but I can't really say I've noticed it crash a lot.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting I find about this is one of the reasons they were doing it is, again, they were worried about being, because they're becoming some heavy competition to Google, they were worried about being shut out of the Play Store or looking at the option of bypassing the Play Store entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's interesting to see how things go and what people do. But yeah, as the article says, they still came back.
I mean, like leaving the Play Store or the App Store behind, but then you're relying on the web or teaching Android users to install an APK from an untrusted source. And I wouldn't do that these days unless I'm the one who built the APK, the application file. For those unaware, it's Android's version of an EXE file. or you know, it's got to be a really trusted source. So, and then you can't really do that on iPhone at all or iPad, because you'd have to actually jailbreak your device, and that's getting harder and harder from what I understand. So
that being said, Apple hasn't shown as much disfavorability towards groups like Facebook, et cetera, especially with how much deep integration they now offer into the operating system. So I think that's a bit of a false comparison.
Fair enough. Yeah, but I mean, getting people to actually manually download a Facebook app, I don't know.
This is where things like the App Store works well. It's a seamless experience. You know, people expect it to be safe. They know it's there. Boom. Yeah. It's done. One step.
I mean,
exactly.
I think Google's really gotten away from looking for a Facebook killer. So I really don't see this as a threat personally.
Right. And this should be pointed. This is a while ago when this happened. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just we're just hearing about it now. But it's just, yeah, it's interesting. But you also wonder, you know, what other vendors have done stuff like this? The ultimate form of an A/B test, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding.
Exactly. Okay.
Get people to quit.
Nope. Nope. They still came back. People kept coming back. I love people that quote. Coming back.
And that, I mean, that's a great problem to have. So,
oh, exactly.
Facebook.
Yep, exactly. Okay, now we're going to finish up the show with our regular feature of what we like. So I'm going to give Jameson first crack at this, since he's our newest host back again. Jameson, what do you got this week?
Oh, thank you. So this week I am choosing something. It's a bit of a rebrand of an old app. I finally decided to take a deep, serious look at some productivity apps. So over the next couple of weeks, I'll have some choices. But the first one I'm going with is it's a web app, but it's also across multiple platforms, Windows, Mac, iOS. I believe they've also got Android, and something called Full Contact. And what it allows you to do is they partnered up with the old Cobook app and allows you to basically sync a bunch of your contact sources together from Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, your iCloud, Google contacts, and combine them all together so that you get a nice, rich experience, not only with deep links to applications, but also being able to call and also just getting the same information across multiple devices. The one thing that I've been really sort of going after when I've been looking at these productivity apps has been a unified experience across all devices. If you don't have both a Mac and iOS app, I'm not interested because I'm sick of having to sort of piecemeal together experiences for things like email or calendar or contacts in this case. And unfortunately, things like Apple's contacts leave something to be desired from the standpoint of synthesizing a useful contact list out of multiple different sources. So Full Contact seems to do a really awesome job of this. They also have a really great feature that for the free account runs once a month. What it does is they're continually scraping up new information about public information about people, be it websites or, you know, Twitter handles or things like that. And it basically offers you the ability to click a button and say, yes, this person, the information I found on the internet is actually relevant to them, and enhances the contact card. So it's really awesome from that. You can pay a monthly or annual fee. It's $9.99 a month or $99 a year. And you get that every day as well as full real-time sync. So there are some advantages to paying for it, but just right off the bat, you get a lot of really great functionality to just enhance your contacts and give you a really seamless experience across all your platforms.
Excellent. Yeah, because I still think, you know, I've been saying this for a while. Yeah, contact list management is still one of the last great unknowns, and I'm glad some companies are looking at it. Just last week, I was looking through some of my old contact lists, and I had so much old information. I have a coworker that we were both at a company together, and I still had in a couple of fields her old information from the old company we were at. So it's definitely something that needs to be looked at. And as you say, having cross-platform is a definite must.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm going to move on to myself, and this is, I warn everyone in advance, this is a shameless plug. We should have music for that, actually. Shameless plug music. I like that idea.
I'll get on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I should also point out, Jameson is the one that did our awesome intro and exit music for the podcast. I know we mentioned it when we first set it up, but we'll have to make sure we include that as well, just while I'm thinking about that. Well, mine this week is actually a shameless plug from the world-famous author, One Day. Oh, yeah, me. I've released a backup and disaster recovery tips book. For the several of you that don't know, I do run a blog and a consulting business at sclarkconsulting.ca. And what I did here was I just took some of the best of my backup and disaster recovery blog posts for the last couple of years, things that, you know, are still relevant today, and I threw them all together into a little e-guide. So for a couple of bucks, you can either get the Amazon copy or you can go to my website and you can get the PDF copy. And I always say it's the excellent gift for someone who has someone else they know that is not backing up currently. And we all know people like this. And I could harp for hours about the importance of backup and that, but I'm just going to say it's well worth doing. Backup's really, really important, and definitely worth a check out if you want all the information in one space. So, well, again, we'll have a link in the show notes. Recommend it. Buy it a lot.
And if you're in the London area, if you need help with that stuff, you can always contact Stuart, and he will give you a good rate on making sure that your stuff is always backed up.
Exactly. Hey, I have to pay for my extremely expensive high price hosting.
Yes.
By our good friends at CleverHost.
I'm pretty sure it's not high priced.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not. No, they're excellent.
But it is excellent.
Oh yeah, we have the CleverHost guy here with his pick of the week, Derek.
Yes, that's me. CleverHost.ca. I'm not going to do a shameless plug, although I just did. I'm actually going to plug the Internet of Things podcast. It's a newer one. Well, it's not that new, but I've just started listening to it.
It's new to you.
It is new to me. The hosts are not. It is Stacey Higginbotham of GigaOM fame. She now writes for Fortune, I think, and Kevin Toefel, who I think writes for ZDNet, which has been around forever. He was also at GigaOM before that. And, they do a really good job of talking about the Internet of Things and connected smart bulbs and video doorbells and sensors. And so they cover personal, commercial, and industrial uses, which is great. It's cool to hear about, not that I'm a fan of the company, but companies like BP and how GE is connecting like 4,000 oil wells with 500,000 sensors apiece, and you know what they're going to do with that, or what they're going to try and figure out how to do with all that data and that sort of thing. Or their experience with the Wink Hub or the Smart Things Hub and getting it connected with a Sylvania or Philips Hue light bulb and stuff like that. So if you are on the fence like myself about when to jump in, this is a really good podcast to listen to find out how people who are pretty much on the bleeding edge and willing to spend their own money to make this happen and check things out, how they're handling the future that you will inevitably have to deal with at some point on, you know, in the next 5, 10, 15 years, especially if you're building a new house. That'd be a great opportunity to jump in. But again, we're still on the brink of, I hope we're on the brink of one or two communication type standards breaking out of the fold and really making it easy to make all this stuff happen.
Exactly.
So that's that's at iotpodcast.com, iTunes, Pocket Casts, Spreaker, I'm confident, wherever, or you can listen right on the website. So
exactly. Basically, wherever you can find our podcast, you'll probably find them.
Yeah, probably.
Exactly. So awesome. Okay, that's the one I'm going to have to check out. So, okay, we're going to finish up. Thank you, everyone, again. Welcome back, Jameson. We hope to see you back on a fairly regular basis.
Oh, I'll be here.
Excellent. Okay, so for episode 54 for Wednesday, January the 6th, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
This is Derek Silva.
And I'm Jameson Roberts.
Thank you, and be well.